Stay tuned to learn about global solidarity and how workplace safety laws came about. It's 3 o'clock. Activate Live starts now.
Activate your voice.
Fight for your rights.
Speak up.
Speak out.
We're union and we're proud.
Go union.
Live from Maryland, this is Activate Live.
Welcome to Activate Live. I'm Tanya Hutchins. Our topics today include global solidarity and workplace safety and health. So we'll introduce you to Petra Brandmark of Industrial Global Union and Rachel Gumpert of Unite Here to talk about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. But first, here's Delaine Adams with the latest labor news. Delaine?
Members of 708, Local 708, are 6 weeks into their strike against Flight Safety Services Corporation in Wichita, Kansas. Southern Territory GVP Ricky Wallace says it best, we should never forget or understate the sacrifices of those who strike. They do it all for working people. You see pictures right there on the screen. And great news out of Canada. Workers at Peel Cheshire Homes in Brampton are the newest members of IAM District Lodge 78 and Local Lodge 1295. The IAM represents more than 400 workers in retirement homes and more than 3,200 workers in the healthcare sector. Welcome to your union. And that's all for the news.
Thanks, Delaine. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, International Women's Day was March 8th, and it was celebrated all around the world. Many of our union members in the United States and Canada took part, but there's more to the message and more we can do to help fellow workers in other countries. Please welcome Industrial Global Union Communications Director, Petra Brandmark. Thanks for being with us, Petra.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So can you recap for us International Women's Day and how it was celebrated around the world?
We have affiliates around the world, and we ask them to take action on International Women's Day. I say ask them to take action, but they were, of course, already planning action in many cases to celebrate on 8th of March. And not only celebrate, but also to highlight issues that women workers are submitted to around the world.
That's great. We have some
this
photos
day we saw
of some of the events. Where was this?
Yes. This is Madagascar, and it is with signs in Malagasy that I don't actually read, but my guess is that a lot of these signs say, take the pledge, which refers to a pledge that we have at Industrial, a pledge to end violence against women in the workplace.
Now, this pledge is something that's also on your website, and here we see other women, Todos Contra a Violencia. Basta, I know basta means stop. So stop violence.
Against women. 35% of all women worldwide are subjected to, have been subjected to violence in the workplace. It's a huge health and safety problem, as well as a problem on many other levels. And we have, showing now our pledge to end violence and harassment against women. And we asked our affiliates to take action to support the pledge on this International Women's Day. There's lots more information about this on the Industrial website, but one of the main reasons why this is always important, and especially in the wake of the Me Too movement, which has been strong in many countries around the world, but also important because in June, the International Labour Organization in Geneva will debate and hopefully adopt the first international convention to end gender-based violence in the world of work.
Now, speaking of an international convention, an ILO convention, on the website it talks about a need for a strong ILO convention on gender-based violence. Can you explain to our viewers what the International Labor Organization does, what it is, and why it's so important to have this in June?
The International Labour Organization is a tripartite organization, and that means that it's made up out of governments, employers, and workers. It was founded in 1919 at the end of the First World War, and looks at conventions related to labour and the world of work.
Now, what is the process when you're trying to get these conventions implemented? What is the process that we go through?
Well, there are a number of conventions. I don't know the exact number, but there are a number of conventions already adopted by the ILO, eight of which are what is called fundamental, like the right to organize, the right to freedom of association, and the right to collective bargaining, that are specifically related to unions. Those are adopted by very many countries, and so that means that those countries are obliged to follow the convention. When there's a new convention, which hopefully there will be a convention on violence against women in the workplace, if it is adopted in June, it is a huge step, but it is also only the first step, because after that, it requires a critical mass of countries actually signing on to ratifying the convention. And once that critical number of countries have ratified the convention, it can actually start to be implemented. So if the convention is adopted in June, which we really hope, and we have, as unions, have worked really hard for this, and remember, it's an agreement between employers, workers, and government. But when, I'll say, just to be hopeful, the convention is adopted in June, that's when we as unions have to start, we have to continue campaigning, but on a different level, because then we need to really campaign to get governments to ratify the convention so that it can eventually come into force.
Well, we're going to think positively as well and hope that this is successful in June. How can members in each country support these campaigns, especially across borders?
Well, like I say, I think once the convention is adopted, then the unions can really start campaigning nationally to get the governments to adopt the convention, and you will be sure to hear from us then.
All right, we'll keep in touch on that. April 2nd is Equal Pay Day for all women, and we recognize that in the United States. What are the efforts like in other countries for women trying to get equal pay with men?
That's not easy to answer in a few words. It's like, how long is a piece of string?
Right.
in Europe, where I live, a lot of countries, you know, there's a lot of talk about equal pay, of course, and the fact that women are not paid after, it varies depending on the country, but you can say that women are not paid after 4:20 in the afternoon, because after that men earn significantly more. Or, for example, on an annual basis, women actually don't receive, they're not actually paid after sometime mid-November, you say, in most Western European countries. That is really important, and it's an important discussion to have, but as a global union representing unions all over the world, we also have many unions whose members don't even earn a living wage. They don't earn enough money to be able to support themselves and their families. So in countries, for a garment worker in Bangladesh or in Cambodia, for example, it is less of an issue. The gender pay gap is less of an issue. Not saying that it doesn't exist, but it might not be the primary hurdle.
We have something called the Paycheck Fairness Act, which is scheduled to be voted on this week in the United States, and that would strengthen penalties that courts can impose for equal pay violation and also prohibit retaliation against workers who ask or tell an employer's wage practices. So we're hoping that this gets passed in this country, and we're hoping it'll be a model for other countries as well. I know it's an ongoing fight. Is there anything else you'd like to mention about how Industrial is set up and just where people can get more information if they would like to support Industrial's efforts or become an affiliate?
Well, yes, absolutely. You can go to our website, industrial-union.org, or you can find us on Facebook. Here's our website, where we report on issues affecting our affiliated unions around the world. So there you can see we have recent stories from Ethiopia and from Turkey. So different sectors, different issues, but this is what we do. We support unions around the world, and our unions around the world support each other, actually. I mean, you know, this is international solidarity at work. So you can find more on our website, and you can also follow us on Twitter, industrial_GU, and follow us on Facebook.
Well, thank you so much for taking out the time, Petra. And we should say that the Machinist Union is an affiliate, and we are so proud to be involved in helping with global solidarity. So thank you, Petra, and we'll keep in touch.
Thank you. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
So what do you think about global solidarity? Comment now to activate your voice about industrial workers' rights and women's rights. You can use live chat on YouTube, and make sure you subscribe. That's the red button. And hit the bell when you're there so you'll be notified of when we post new videos. You can also comment on Facebook, or you can reply to this video on Twitter. And we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks to everyone who has commented so far. We really appreciate it. I'm going to actually update my page on Facebook so I can see the live show on here and see if there are people who have commented yet. There are a lot of you that comment on a regular basis, and we really do appreciate that. My computer's a little bit slow, but there we go. I just hit on it. And thank you so much for joining us. We have so many people joined. District Lodge 70 has joined. Ko Vang, Dave Leaf Hive has joined. I am Local Lodge 774 has joined. So we're hoping to get the conversation started about global solidarity. So we really do appreciate it. Well, the deadliest workplace disaster. Oh, look, we got a comment. Dave Leaf Hive says hello from Local 1886, where shop stewards are getting trained today. Solidarity from all of us. Thank you, Dave. We appreciate it. Well, the deadliest workplace disaster in New York's history happened in less than 20 minutes on March 25th, 1911. 146 people died in a fire at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory because managers had locked the doors. Now, this is a picture here of the factory fire afterwards. Most of the victims were women and girls who had tried to organize to improve working conditions. They went on a strike 2 years earlier in what became known as the Uprising of 20,000 when they walked out without notice. Now, the International Ladies Garment Workers Union had been actively trying to organize the workers in New York's garment industry. And what's even more sad is that many of the women and girls who died in that fire were related. If you look at the names, you often see the same last name of women and girls who were only a year or two apart in age. Well, it's just a tragedy. The International Ladies Garment Workers Union became part of what is now known as Unite Here. And to give us more insight, Rachel Gumpert is here to take a look back with us on the effects of that 1911 tragedy. Thank you so much for joining us, Rachel.
Thank you for having us, sister. We are so grateful that you're spending some of the podcast to lift up what our legacy is on this.
No problem. It is a fascinating story, looking back at the history, but it's also so sad and so tragic. Tell us a little bit about how this, you know, because of this fire, we have a lot of the regulations and laws that we have today to protect us in the workplace.
That's right. This fire really was a catalyst for a lot of the modern day safety reforms that I think people take for granted. Things like sprinklers, having some kind of fire exit that is secured. These are all things that really resulted from the outrage that came after the fires, but are also a result of the organizing power of these women. Like you said, they had just gone on strike 1 year before this. They had just won their union. So I think that really the sacrifice of these women is that through their deaths, there have been dozens of changes that were made just in the first year after the fire.
Can you tell us a little bit about what working conditions were like? If we could imagine ourselves working in this factory in 1911, what was that like?
They were really challenging. The work days were incredibly long. Some of the reforms that happened afterwards were to end the incredibly long hours that women had had. The women were treated very poorly. It was predominantly immigrant women. They were truly second-class citizens. This is very much a civil rights story. And what we were seeing is these rich managers who had actually came to America as immigrants themselves, they pulled up the ladder when they had established themselves, and they created these sweatshop-like conditions where women worked really the ninth floor was the area where the seamstresses were, where the worst of the fire happened. And in a huge factory, the entire room was just lined with women working who were really quite replaceable to management. They could be fired at whim. They were certainly very constantly reminded of how disposable they were. And before the fire, there actually were young children under the age of 13 who had been working there at times. And when inspectors came around, they would just be hidden in baskets. So the conditions were quite poor there.
That's crazy. I think I read part of the history on your website because I went to so many different places like unionist.com and history.com, and I found, you know, your history on the Unite Here's website. And I think I read somewhere that they were supposed to have buckets of water, but they weren't there.
No, they weren't there. What we really see is that even the very base level of regulations that should have been in place before the fire were not adhered to. There's actually lawsuits after the death. There was formal indictments made against the bosses for causing the deaths of these women. They were acquitted from that, but found guilty of a civil case in being accountable for the death of these women. And not having water that was supposed to be there was one issue. They, as you said, locked a door that was a really key way for women to leave. And the reason they did that is because they had such disrespect of these women that they really believed that they were going to be stealing from them. And so every woman was subjected to a male manager going through her things before she left at the end of the day.
And what were the locks about? Was it about not wanting them to take breaks, not wanting them to leave? I can't imagine being locked in to a place.
I think it's really just a case of management doing whatever they can to exploit and control their workers when they're able to. They're quite against these women unionizing. The women won their union despite that. And I think that this was an example of management control. The stated reason that we see most often is that management was very concerned that women were going to be stealing things. But considering that they had an incredibly long workday, they only had one 30-minute break the entire time, I think that certainly that was a large part of it too, controlling exactly where they were when.
Because they were working way more than 8 hours, right?
Absolutely.
Was it like 12 to 14 or something
Absolutely.
Like that?
Yeah, I believe they started their days around 7 a.m. and ended around 8 p.m. So
wow.
It was incredibly long days.
With 30 minutes and that's it.
That's right.
That's crazy.
Right. And if they made mistakes, they were fired.
Ridiculous. I mean, some of the ages that I was looking at, I mean, they were like 17-year-olds, six, even like you said, 13, hiding when the inspectors came.
That's right.
And going back to something that you just said, even though they were found guilty in the civil suit, to think that the owners were acquitted after 146 people die.
And part of the reason why the acquittal is so heartbreaking is because I think that aside from the evidence that the managers were the ones giving the directions, which is what witnesses and workers testified, a lot of the reason why the acquittal happened is because of a very racist ideology that was employed by the boss's defense attorney, where they really tried to exploit the distrust of immigrant workers and tried to come after the credibility of the witnesses based on not being primarily English speakers.
That is just, and you know what? It's so sad that we still have some of that going on today.
Exactly. That's why it's so amazing you're covering this, because there are so many real life parallels, even to our Marriott strikes that we had in 2018. These were immigrant women who were leading changing the industry by striking, just like these workers at Triangle Factory. These were immigrant women who struck and won a union to do better for their families as well.
What are some of the other campaigns that you have going on and to improve working conditions?
Well, certainly an ongoing campaign for us. We settled our strikes with Marriott with the best contracts that the hotel industry has ever had. We're negotiating Hilton and Hyatt now. But even at Marriott, the fight goes on to win safe working conditions. Right now, we're really adamantly fighting a program that causes injury for hotel housekeepers called the Green Choice Program. And we're organizing across all regions of America. And we're certainly very active in the negotiations for our airline catering workers, the people who serve the food on the planes this year. We have 18,000 of them negotiating contracts in 2019.
I know that a lot of unions are behind you, especially when it comes to hotels, and we look at that list that you have on your website of at-risk hotels when we're traveling. So
thank you
for having that information available.
We appreciate your support.
Do you think that we really do take things for granted when it comes to safe working conditions? I mean, we're used to seeing the sprinkler systems up in our workplaces.
That's right.
And in hotels. We really don't think about it, and we're up in these high rises, especially in hotels like that. You know, what is it going to take, do you think, for people to not be complacent?
I think the only thing that really catalyzes change is when workers rise up and organize together. The strikes that our women in the predecessor union, Free Unite Here, had back in 1911, shortly before 1911, it wasn't a movement that happened in and of itself for one employer. It was 15,000 workers in the garment industry rising and striking together, just like the teachers have been rising and striking together, like hotel workers rose and struck together last year. I think that workers continuing to show that courage and to flip the capitalist system on its head like that is the only way to get power back. And I do think that when workers stand up for themselves, it galvanizes the public. We've seen incredible support for Red for Ed, for the Marriott strikes, and during the Triangle aftermath, even in that aftermath of tragedy, there are hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers who turned out to the streets immediately afterwards demanding reform and justice.
And wasn't that part of the funeral where
That's
you
right.
just saw hundreds of thousands of people come out in New York?
That's right. People estimated between 350,000 to 400,000 people were out, and that's why dozens of reforms were able to be achieved. The political bosses did not have an inherent interest in that. It was the aligning of the public with the workers, and especially the new power bloc that was coming when these immigrant workers were voting together. I think that having especially workers of color and immigrants from the rising American electorate getting engaged in politics is crucial to taking back the labor laws in this country.
Talk a little bit about the history of your union, because like us, you're similar, where we've had different unions come together and decide to join together. So we have a long history. Can you take us through that history of mergers of how the International Lady Garment Workers Union became part of what is now Unite Here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Unite and Here used to be separate too,
they
right?
They were, yeah. And Unite Here is actually a very young union as a labor movement goes, which is part of why we're so proud to be the fastest growing AFL-CIO union in the country. We're going to catch you. I think that the fact that there's competition of unions growing so quickly now is amazing.
It's
such a good sign, and so different from where the movement was even 10 years ago. And Unite Here, our legacy is built on this incredible militancy from especially women and immigrant women. So on the Unite side, that represented our textile and garment workers. So people like these women in New York City who are sending money back to their country of origin to support, sometimes up to a dozen people back there and working literally to the bone. That's, part of where the expression is derived from, is because of the incredibly difficult labor they put in. And on the hotel side, we have HERE, which also has an incredible history of militancy in the hotel worker movement, which is very much aligned with the immigrant rights movement because there are so many immigrant workers who work in hotels, particularly as our hotel housekeepers. So Unite Here truly has an amazing history of radicalism, of militism, and of members who are just so willing to take on all of the different structural hurdles that keep the wealth system in place, because that's the only way to win for their families. And I think that we see in our union that women are often the ones who lead the way in the movement.
And your union is mostly women, isn't it?
That's right, we're majority female. We also have an enormous contingent of immigrant workers. We have many workers on temporary protected status, TPS and DACA. And the largest job classification that we represent in hotels is the hotel housekeepers who clean the room every day for the guests.
What is the status? I know, and I didn't even tell her I was going to ask her about this, but what is the status of having that safety button for housekeepers?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that. So the industry has been ardently opposing us on that for, the 7 years that we've been fighting for it. But despite that, we've been winning it across the country. We have, I think, established a new standard that going forward, any union hotel that has a contract with Unite Here, we are certainly going to be able to achieve a safety button, I believe. That is what we achieved in the Marriott strikes. It's only one prong of several prongs that we need against sexual harassment in these hotels, and the industry is rapidly organized against us on this. So even though in our strikes we were able to secure these, we also secured removal of guests who commit some kind of assault against women. They should not be allowed to continue their stay in the hotel after they assault a housekeeper. We also want to have guests barred from returning to the hotel the next week or the next month, so making sure there's a system in place to track and bar people from immediate return. Our contracts vary between 3 to 5 years in different cities and employers for what we seek for that. But unfortunately, we've seen some of the biggest employers in the industry, including Marriott, really not doing all they can on this. So Marriott actually has not rolled out panic buttons, as far as we can tell, to non-union hotels anywhere in the country that we're aware of.
How do the buttons actually work? When they push it, what happens?
Well, that's a good question. Management will sometimes try to save a few bucks and hand out what is essentially a rape whistle, which is not adequate. We actually saw that happen in Seattle after Unite Here Local 8 passed an ordinance winning panic buttons there in 2017. What Unite Here believes is the right standard is a GPS-enabled panic button that in real time will actually send the exact location of the housekeeper through Wi-Fi to a central room where security is able to monitor it at all times so that in the event of a crisis, if a worker hits her safety button, they can immediately get help to exactly where she is. Without the GPS capabilities, there really isn't enough protection going into these.
Yeah, if you're on the 25th floor and you blow a whistle, like if security is in the basement or on the first floor, they're not going to hear that.
That's exactly right. And I think that we've gone to the place where Unite Here's organizing around this, and especially our work to educate the public about the sexual harassment levels that hotel workers and particularly housekeepers face, has gone to a position where management understands that it's no longer a publicly tenable position to oppose these devices. But what they're really trying to do is chink away at laws that we've passed, including in Seattle, where management successfully sued and overturned our sexual harassment protections on Christmas Eve of last year. We also, unfortunately, see them really trying to get away with doing as little as they can in many instances in regards to the capabilities of the device and what exactly it is that they're handing out to the workers and whether it has GPS.
This really has me thinking now. Like every time I go into a hotel and I see somebody from housekeeping, you know, it makes me think, like, what if everybody's out at a convention during the day and there is no one on either side of the room or nobody on that floor, you know?
That's right.
It's scary to think about.
It is, and that's one of the reasons why I think this union is so incredible in the work that it does, because to most of the public, before we started really fighting on this issue nearly a decade ago, the work that our housekeepers did was so invisible, and the average guest might have, you know, walked past their housekeeper without even making eye contact. So the level of visibility that housekeepers have now, I think, is a huge improvement, and they certainly deserve all of the dignity that that together we fight for. But there's a long ways to go, for sure.
Yeah, we talk about having dignity on the job, and it's like, at least say hello, acknowledge, you know, your employee.
That's right, and I think that in the non-union hotels, the standards are just incredibly shocking. There have been hotels that are non-union that we're aware of that have sometimes, you know, up to a dozen instances of sexual assaults that are reported by workers, but because they don't have a union, management concedes nothing without demand and has been hesitant to make any improvements.
Well, I love the fact that you stopped by. How can people get more information? Can they go to your website?
Absolutely, unitehere.org. We also have an excellent presence on social media. A great Twitter account is UniteHere, and you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Well, I know our unions have worked together in the past, and I love it when unions work together, so I hope that we can support each other moving forward. And we have, you know, you talked about your militancy, and we're the fighting machinists, so we have that in common as well.
That's right.
So hopefully we can fight together.
Absolutely.
To improve working conditions everywhere.
We were so grateful for the machinists to be incredible partners in all of our strike cities in 2018.
Well, we're going to keep supporting each other, so thank you so much. And I wanted to let anybody know that wanted any more information on the Triangle Shirtwaist factory fire, that a lot of the information that I was looking up, preparing for, I did go to unitehere.org because it was in their history, but I also found information at Cornell University's Kiel Center for Labor Management and Documentation and Archives, and that was part of Cornell University's School of Industrial and Labor Relations. So there's so much information out there, and when you start reading it, I'm like a history buff. I just love reading about the past and hopefully learning from it.
Mm-hmm.
So we appreciate you taking the time to come here.
Thank you for highlighting this and how it continues to parallel the real world for our members.
Thank you. Well, sit tight for a second. We're just going to go through our calendar to let people know what's going on, because I didn't get a chance to talk to her. I want to talk to her for a few minutes before she goes. Well, for more information on the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire, as I said, visit unitehere.org, unionist.com, history.com, or visit a library near you. Well, if you love basketball and dogs, we have got something for you. We have another bracket. Yours is probably busted by now, so why not try IAM's Puppy Madness? It's a fundraiser to benefit our favorite charity, Guide Dogs of America. So you see the bracket right here. They're all cute. Just go to IAMPuppyMadness.com, just like I did today, and start voting. Just choose a pup or two to get started. You can vote for all of them if you want. I may do that. And you could look at all these puppies that are representing their districts and the districts that are representing their puppies. So you have to decide who's the cutest. The national championship is April 8th, so vote now, vote often. They're actually going to choose, I think, tonight. They're going to wind it down or narrow it down. So we have, what, 2, 4, 6, 8 dogs right now. I think they're going to narrow it down tonight to 4 dogs. And then April 8th, they'll narrow it down, and you'll see who is in the championship. So this is so exciting. For the record, all these dogs are adorable, and you can tell I'm a dog person because I love them all. I want to vote for them all. So I've already voted for a couple, but I'm going to keep going this afternoon. So I can't wait.
Rocky's pretty cute.
Yes, they're all cute. Look at that. See? Well, if you're a member of the IAM, one of the benefits of your union membership is the ability to take classes at the Wimpasinger Education and Technology Center in Maryland. And here are some deadlines for you to keep in mind. It is time to register for the following classes. Critical Incident Response Team, April 10th, that's due. The Human Rights class, that registration is due April 15th. EAP 3 is due April 22nd. And you have until April 29th to register for Federal Employees Basic Program. For more information, go to the website, wimpasinger.iamaw.org. We also have some state councils coming up. March 30th, the Arizona State Council meets in Prescott Valley. March 30th to the 31st is the California Conference in Sacramento. April 26th, Michigan State Council meets in Ann Arbor. And the New York State Council meets in Niagara Falls, April 28th to the 30th. And don't forget that you have a little bit more time to enter the 2019 IAM Photo Contest. So if you have a photo, and it's also a web contest, web and newsletter. So if you have a photo of somebody who is on the job or performing community service, all of our information is on our website, goiam.org. And you can enter that contest. Woody, our director of communications, is in the studio. Woody, is that still April 1st they have to get it in by?
Yes.
Okay, April 1st. So you have a few more days to gather all your best photos, your best work, and send it in to us. All the instructions are on the website. Our conferences, as far as they go, April 8th to 11th is the Transportation Conference in Las Vegas. May 6th to the 8th is our legislative conference in Washington, D.C. We'll have people coming from all over the United States to meet with their representatives and senators here in D.C. about issues that are important to working families. June 10th to the 14th is the IAM Wood, Pulp, and Paper Conference in Biloxi, Mississippi. And do not forget, we've been talking about workplace safety, and we talked about losing workers in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. Well, we are going to observe Workers' Memorial Day on May 1st. It's April 28th every year, but our observation will be May 1st at 11 a.m. It'll be down in Hollywood, Maryland. We are going to try to stream this live. That is our theme, that we're mourning the dead, but we're also fighting for the living. That's what we have to be militant about and fight for, is fighting machinists. So tune in for that. Also, our women's conference is coming up next week. Women Rising, Unite the Fight. So we are hoping that you can make it to this April 3rd to the 6th. So that is our list of what's been going on. Next week, join us at the IAM Women's Conference. Support your siblings. You can share this video to your local or your district page. And thanks to all of you who already have. Say goodbye here from me and Rachel from Unite here. Thanks a lot.